executed areas, it's 30 too many. But the prospect for proliferation and for very widespread future use is horrifying. About 76 governments stockpile this weapon. The stockpiles of cluster munitions contain billions of submunitions, not just millions or hundreds of millions, but billions of submunitions. If those get used, we'll have a crisis much worse than landmines. So we're dealing with an existing problem, but we're preventing one that could be of a truly tragic scale. The success of this Oslo process will depend in no small part on the success of this week. This is a crucial week in the history of this movement. We want first and foremost for the outcome of this week to be a large number of governments. We'd like to see all 122 governments who were here endorse the Wellington Declaration by the end of the week. This is the formal ticket to the negotiations. It's where states commit to go and negotiate a formally negotiated treaty based on the text that emerges from Wellington. It's crucial to the momentum and credibility and commitment of this process that states are ready to endorse this declaration and to move forward to Dublin to negotiate a strong treaty. We also hope that this week there will be significant progress on the treaty text. The existing treaty text is, in the NGO view, very strong. It's an excellent basis for the formal negotiations. We identify a number of areas that can be strengthened, where language can be clarified, but it is a truly excellent product that has been developed thus far. Our main concern is that there will be some states who want to see weakening provisions inserted into the treaty text, either here in Wellington or in Dublin. Of course, there's still plenty to negotiate. Formal negotiations haven't even started. It is the nature of the undertaking to have differences of opinion about what should be in and outside of a treaty. But there are several crucial issues that the NGOs have focused on that they believe would fundamentally undercut the credibility of a future treaty. First among those would be any attempts to introduce broad exceptions to the prohibition. This treaty is going to prohibit cluster munitions, the use, production, stockpiling, and trade of cluster munitions that have caused unacceptable harm. Some states have indicated they would like to see some broad exceptions, mostly of a technical nature, particularly to have an exception for cluster munitions with submunitions that have self-destruct mechanisms. Some states have talked about an approach of allowing cluster munitions if they have a certain maximum failure rate. 1% has been talked about. The NGOs think that there is abundant evidence that self-destruct mechanisms don't work. In Lebanon, one of the most highly regarded self-destruct submunitions, called the M85, which is supposed to have a tested failure rate of less than 1%, ended up with a combat failure rate of 10% and higher. My organization, Human Rights Watch, has just put out a new report on this, which is available to you. Self-destruct mechanisms don't work. The failure rates that one sees in testing conditions just have no relationship to what happens in actual combat. These approaches are non-starters if you want to have a good, strong treaty. Second issue, in addition to potential exceptions, is a transition period. A number of states are talking about, yes, we'll agree to ban the weapon, but we don't want the ban to take effect for a number of years. Even 10 years has been talked about. This, again, we see as a non-starter. If you have agreed these weapons cause unacceptable harm to civilians, you can't keep using them while you try to build a better weapon. Third issue is one that goes under the rubric of interoperability. It's a long word and probably doesn't translate. But in essence, it is trying to deal with a real-world problem of states, future states parties to this convention, potentially engaging in combined operations, coalition operations, with a force, an armed force, that may still want to use cluster munitions. And there is a prohibition in the draft treaty text, a prohibition that is based on the Mine Ban Treaty and based on the Chemical Weapons Convention, that says you cannot assist with any act that is prohibited, a very broad provision which has been key to the success of the Mine Ban Treaty. We think there are practical ways to deal with this real-world issue, but introducing language into the treaty that would, in essence, facilitate the use of cluster munitions by allied armed forces, again, makes absolutely no sense to us. We can't undermine the stigma against the weapon in such a way. These are all things that Don's going to take care of by the end of the week. We don't think that they'll be taken care of by the end of the week. We do think that we have the possibility for some exciting, intense moments over the course of this week on these issues. They'll be resolved in Dublin during formal negotiations. But we think that these are the key issues where the treaty is going to come under some tension. It's a very powerful mix of disarmament and humanitarian law. Requires clearance of contaminated areas. It requires assistance to victims. It's an integrated approach that is highly unusual. It's been very effective through the Mine Ban Treaty. We have a chance to duplicate it here. I'll end just by, again, thanking the minister and for him noting the important role that NGOs have played. Again, this is an unusual part of this process where NGOs are listened to. Survivors are brought into the room. We have many survivors here. We encourage you to do interviews with them, to get their stories, to get their points of view on the things that are being discussed over the course of this week. We have NGOs with great experience in clearing cluster munitions, in helping the survivors. It's a broad, diverse coalition that brings an awful lot to the table, and we very much appreciate the ability to work in partnership with the governments to help bring about the strongest possible convention. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve, and once again, thank you to the NGOs for the pivotal role that they've played in pushing this process and supporting the governments that are leading on it. Don, is there anything you want to add at this point?
Or? I haven't moved to questions.
Right, well, the floor is now open for questions.
Minister, you talk about obviously having a lot of the players here and that it'll be an important treaty, but there are some big states missing out, USA, Israel, Russia, China, India, Pakistan, if not users of cluster munitions, manufacturers of. What validity does any agreement reached here have if they're not a part of this?
Well, I think we take what we learned from the success of the Ottawa Convention. It started off as a small group. There are now 156 signatories to the Ottawa Convention banning landmines. And I use that as an example, as a parallel, because cluster munitions are effectively landmines when they don't detonate. They lie there waiting for unsuspecting civilians to stumble upon them. And what has happened as a result of Ottawa is that even those countries that haven't signed up to the Landmine Convention have felt stigmatized about using those particular weapons. I think with a critical mass of support for the Cluster Munitions Treaty, those countries that haven't been part of the process and don't sign up to it will still feel constrained about the continued use of those munitions. That's what we're hoping for.
Well, Rob, there wasn't much restraint showed in the recent conflict in Lebanon, however, with Israel's use of cluster munitions.
Absolutely not, and I think that it's the events in the Lebanon that have given real momentum to what we are doing now through the Oslo process. Countries, including New Zealand, that had tried year after year at the convention on certain conventional weapons to get progress, finally in frustration took this process outside of Geneva to set up a different track. That track has been successful. At the same time, of course, many countries represented here, and certainly New Zealand, have been involved with helping clear the Lebanon of those cluster munitions. I welcome back our second rotation from Lebanon just a week ago. They cleared something like 1,800 cluster munitions, allowing people to move back out onto their land, to farm their land, to clear the village. That's important. But what we're trying to do here is to create the fence at the top of the cliff, stop it happening in the first place, and not simply be the ambulance at the bottom, clearing afterwards, providing assistance to survivors afterwards. That's important, but the critical thing, and what we're focused on this week, is to stop it happening in the first instance.
The Greens argue that your argument on that is undermined, given the Superfund actually invests in companies that are manufacturers of cluster munitions. What credibility can we have on the world stage?
I think we have plenty of credibility. The Superfund, as you're aware, is run independently, but it's run according to international principles through the United Nations of responsible investment. Indeed, the Superfund has quite publicly withdrawn investments from a number of companies that were very closely associated with the production of cluster munitions. What we are doing here is the most effective thing that we as a country can do, working with others, other governments, working with the NGOs, to stop the use of cluster munitions, to stop the creation of cluster munitions, where those munitions have what is quite clearly unacceptable effects on the civilian population. There is no inconsistency in the government position.
So what is it?
Can I simply add to that that, of course, it's well known that New Zealand has not acquired, does not possess, and has not and will not use cluster munitions. Our position on that is absolutely clear.
You're talking about unacceptable harm. Does that imply that there is acceptable harm?
No form of harm is acceptable. What will be part of the discussions that occur this week will be where the definitions are drawn. For example, I understand, Don, that there are forms of cluster munitions that do not contain munitions but contain chaff and various other things. Clearly, we're not interested in that side of it. We're interested in cluster munitions where there is clearly harm to civilian populations.
How hard is it going to be to get some of the manufacturing states on board for a total ban so you avoid those exceptions for things like the self-destruct cluster munitions?
That's directed to Steve, isn't it?
This week we'll provide an answer to that, I think. We're going to find out probably this week more than we have throughout the course of this process just where some of the bottom lines are for states who've been a little hesitant to fully embrace a comprehensive treaty. Not surprisingly, those are mostly the states who have produced and who have stockpiles. But they're in this because they want to do something about cluster munitions. There is a general sense that this is an undertaking in which we have a common goal. We're going to find out over the course of this week whether people are ready to put the humanitarian concerns at the top of the agenda or whether it's going to be an effort to protect individual stockpiles. We think that the momentum is such, that the pressure is such, that every state who's part of this process now is going to eventually come around to the position that you can't have broad exceptions to a treaty and still say that it is achieving the objective of the process, which is to prohibit all cluster munitions that cause unacceptable harm. We've said over and over that the burden of proof is on governments to demonstrate that there is any cluster munition that doesn't cause unacceptable harm. The non-explosive cluster munitions have pretty much already been taken off the table. Nothing's off the table until you negotiate it, but people understand that those are not the kinds of weapons that have caused harm in the past or that are likely to cause harm in the future. There's a whole range of other types of cluster munitions that will be under discussion over the next few days and again in Dublin.
Which states are we specifically talking about here who are in the waiver?
It's primarily the European producers and stockpilers, France, the United Kingdom, Germany, being ones who have been most explicit in making their views known to date. But there's a number of other states that haven't come out and spoken in detail about their positions. And they might come out of the closet a little bit this week.
Specifically?
Well, we'll find out this week how far they go. I mean, we've identified a dozen or so states in our various publications based on the statement that they've made either nationally or during the course of the Oslo process.
I'll briefly summarize, like, apart from Europe, which other parts of the globe are we talking about?
Yeah. We've had what we consider to be disturbing statements from Japan on some issues from Australia.
Is that before or after the election?
Before. But this is really the first meeting since the election. So we'll see what the new position is during the course of this discussion.
South America?
South America has been pretty united in their support for this process. All of Latin America, Central America and South America, and of the Caribbean as well. The most notable country that has stayed away from this process has been Brazil, but they're here for the first time in an international meeting. They're attending this meeting, so we're looking forward to seeing if there has been any shift in their policy.
Okay, hang on. I'm going to just give everybody else a chance to ask some questions. We'll come back to you if we've got time at the end. Thank you.
Mr. Minister, regarding the endorsement of the Wellington Declaration, will there be any kind of voting or something?
No, it is not subjected to a vote. The process will be that those countries who feel able to on Friday will sign up to the declaration, which is a ticket to the Dublin conference. Other countries will need to take the results of the conference back to their own countries to discuss further, but we will anticipate further signatories after this conference, but before the Dublin conference in May. Don.
It's actually the same process as in Oslo. There was no vote in Oslo either. At the end of Oslo, countries were invited to identify whether or not they supported the Oslo Declaration. We will follow the same process here. So the declaration will not be put to the meeting for a vote, and it wasn't put to a meeting to the meeting for a vote in Oslo.
Do you have any idea what part of the international arms industry cluster munitions account for? I mean, how significant is it in terms of the international arms industry?
In dollar terms, Steve, you might have a...
At the moment, it is not very significant at all. Much of the production of cluster munitions has essentially been suspended as people are waiting, I think, to find out what's going to be banned and what's not going to be banned. It was a huge part of the industry back in the 70s and 80s and, to a lesser extent, the early 90s. This is one of the problems we have, is that so many were produced in those years. It's a Cold War weapon, and it was produced in huge numbers in the anticipation of fighting a major battle in the plains of Europe. It's not the way we fight wars now, and you've got the wrong weapons in your arsenal to be able to carry that out. But, I mean, for example, in the United States, who everyone identifies as the major producer, who produced cluster munitions for several years.
You said that, we know that the U.S., China, Russia, India, and Pakistan aren't here as delegates, but it's funny that they have observed it.
My understanding is not, but I'll just double-check with the chairman on that.
They're not? No.
I'm getting a signal from the back that they are not here, and nor would actually I expect them to be here if they weren't considering joining up to the process.
Yes. Do you think there is such a resistance to banning cluster munitions and things like that?
I think there are still countries that feel that the weapons have military utility, which they may have, but they also have unacceptable effects on civilian populations. That's why I think this process has developed the momentum that it has. As commented earlier, people saw what happened in Lebanon and frankly were appalled at what happened there. A million unexploded cluster munitions left lying about for people to die and be maimed from long after the conflict had ended. That situation is not acceptable, just as the use today of landmines is not acceptable.
The situation in Lebanon arguably was one of collective punishment. Do you have any comment to make on that?
I don't believe in collective punishment.
Well, we all don't believe in it. It's illegal, but that use, is that one of the uses which it seems to be ongoing in terms of the motivations of those who continue to want to...
Well, I'm not going to place motivations on other countries other than to say that I think most nations were appalled at the high level of cluster munitions used in the last 3 days of that conflict without a very clear military purpose.
Is there any chance of getting Lebanon involved? Israel involved?
I think Israel at the current time is in the same category as some of the other countries that have been mentioned. Obviously, we would hope that every country ultimately would see the humanitarian principles behind what we're trying to achieve and, with encouragement from groups within their own country, would sign up. So I'm not ruling any country out, but nor am I predicting that Israel will be one of the first countries to join in the process.
Lebanon is here.
What other Middle East countries are involved?
There are a number of countries in the Middle East. We've got Egypt involved in the process. I don't have the list in front of me. We have a number of the Gulf states who are here. I mentioned Lebanon. We can easily make a list of participating countries available. I mean, it's a pretty broad spread to get 122 countries.
Okay.
Reflective of the various geographical regions as well.
The conference is about to get underway, so unless somebody's got a pressing question they haven't asked yet, I'll thank you all very much for attending and look forward to your continuing coverage of the conference through the week. Thank you very much.